I may not have a license to kill, but liberalism dies a little every time I pull the trigger on it. This is a conservative's perspective. Hey everybody, a conservative's perspective here on the Mojo 50 Radio Network, mojo50.com. If you aren't listening, you should be, because it is the very best in libertarian and conservative talk radio, mojo50.com. Well, a couple weeks off, had a chest cold, which I have been reliably informed was not a chest cold at all. That's apparently just what old-timey people call bronchitis or bronchial pneumonia, but I didn't have that, I don't think. Anyway, it was a pretty bad chest cold, and they happen on a regular basis. I'll get another one as March turns into April and the weather goes from being cool to a little bit milder. Seasonal thing. But it did a number on me this year, and I was out for a couple of weeks because the chest congestion was of a nature that was very clingy and stubborn, and had to do a lot of coughing to try and, you know, purge it. The result being that I had a pretty rough voice there for a while. It's still not back 100%, but it's considerably better than it was. A lot of things have been happening the last 2 weeks. 4 weeks ago and 3 weeks ago, respectively, we were gobsmacked and heartbroken and grief-stricken, really, over Hurricane Helene, and followed up a week later with Hurricane Milton. And it's like it never happened. You guys see anything in the news about it much anymore? Nope, neither do I. FEMA's still doing a suck job. Those people are still suffering. And what was heartening about the whole thing, which proves that we didn't really need FEMA as much as we thought, look at the volunteer efforts that went into helping those people when it became more than abundantly clear that FEMA sucked. Of course, we knew it sucked for a long time. Now, illegal aliens will tell you that it doesn't suck. They love it. They're crazy about it. They think FEMA does some of the best work in the world. That's why they come here, for their blue ribbon concierge service for illegal aliens. Prayers for those people. They still need prayers. There's still people out there. You know, they don't have anything. It's all gone. It washed away. Houses washed away. Family members washed away. Lives. Lives, America, washed away. If you haven't given, I can promise anything that you do give now will still be put to good use. I encourage everyone to do what they can. Heartbreaking. And Kamala Harris did a couple of interviews, did one with Bret Baier, which we're going to listen to here in a little bit, just in case you have trouble sleeping. And she did another one with Anderson Cooper. And basically, I can't remember who wrote the headline or who said it, but she was in a one-person debate in both cases, and she lost. But the losing was really big on Fox. Here's the thing. She's vapid. She's venal. She's vacuous. She's empty. Okay? You grab Kamala Harris up, and you shake her, and then you turn her upside down, and you just get a lot of buzzwords and catchphrases. There's no substance to this chick. None. Zero. Zip. Nada. And that was what the problem was. People know that there's no substance to this chick. So her handlers say, we've got to show her to be substantial. So she can't be doing these softball interviews anymore. She's going to have to come up with some legitimate journalists. So I don't know why they pulled Anderson Cooper, but they pulled Bret Baier and Anderson Cooper, and she did this interview. And the interview is just god-awful. And if you haven't heard it all, get ready. It's not very long. It's 10 or 15 minutes. That's all it is. It was supposed to be 30 minutes, but she showed up late intentionally because she's trying to drag this thing out. She's trying to play the clock. But it's really not working, and it's sad. That the Democrats are stuck with this, and I'm sure by now, if there was ever any buyer's remorse in the in the Democrat Party. They probably got it right now. Anyway, this is from week before last. Kamala Harris, Bret Baier, Fox News, the Word Salad Buffet.
Thank you. It's good to be with you, Bret.
You know, voters tell pollsters all over the country and here in Pennsylvania that immigration is one of the key issues that they're looking at this election, and specifically the influx of illegal immigrants from more than 150 countries. How many illegal immigrants would you estimate your administration has released into the country over the last 3.5 years?
Well, I'm glad you raised the issue of immigration, because I agree with you. It is a topic of discussion that people want to rightly have. And you know what I'm going to talk about.
Yeah, but do you think it's 1 million, 3 million?
Bret, let's just get to the point. Okay, the point is that we have a broken immigration system that needs to be repaired.
So your Homeland Security Secretary said that 85% of apprehensions.
I'm not finished. We have
it's a rough estimate of 6 million people have been released into the country. And let me just finish. I'll get to the question, I promise you.
I was beginning to answer.
And when you came into office, your administration immediately reversed a number of Trump border policies. Most significantly, the policy that required illegal immigrants to be detained through deportation, either in the U.S. or in Mexico. And you switched that policy. They were released from custody awaiting trial. So instead, included in those were a large number of single men, adult men, who went on to commit heinous crimes. So looking back, do you regret the decision to terminate Remain in Mexico at the beginning of your administration?
At the beginning of our administration, within practically hours of taking the oath, the first bill that we offered Congress, before we worked on infrastructure, before the Inflation Reduction Act, before the CHIPS and Science Act, before the bipartisan Safer Communities Act, the first bill, practically within hours of taking the oath, was a bill to fix our immigration system.
Yes, ma'am. It was called the U.S. Citizenship Act of 2021.
Exactly.
May I finish responding, please?
You have to let me finish.
You
please.
Had the White House and the House and the Senate,
I'm
and they didn't bring up
of
that bill.
I'm responding to the point you're raising,
okay.
And I'd like to finish.
Yes, ma'am.
We recognized from day one that, to the point of this being your first question, it is a priority for us as a nation and for the American people. And our focus has been on fixing a problem. And from day one, then, we have done a number of things, including to address our asylum system and put more resources, getting more judges, what we needed to do to tighten up penalties and increase penalties for illegal crossings, what we needed to do to deal with points of entry between border entry points. That's the work we did, and we worked on supporting what was a bipartisan effort, including some of the most conservative members of the United States Congress, to actually strengthen the border. That border bill would have put 1,500 more border agents at the border, which is why I believe the Border Patrol agents supported the bill. It would have allowed us to stem the flow of fentanyl coming into the United States, which is a scourge affecting people of every background, every geographic location in our country, killing people. It would have allowed us to put more resources into prosecuting transnational criminal organizations, which I have done.
Yes, ma'am.
As the Attorney General, former Attorney General of a border state.
Madam Vice President, a couple of things.
Prosecuted trafficking of drugs, guns, and human beings. And Donald Trump, but let me just finish.
Six Democrats voted against that bill.
Learned about that bill and told them to kill it because he preferred to run on a problem instead of fixing a problem. And in this election, this is rightly a discussion that the American people want to have. And what they want are solutions, and they want a president of the United States who's not playing political games with the issue.
I hear you.
But actually is focused on fixing it.
Six Democrats voted against that bill. It would have allowed 1.8 million illegal immigrants into the country a year. A lot of conservatives had a problem with it. These are the six Democrats. But more importantly, back to the original premise, Jocelyn Nungeri, Rachel Morin, Lakin Riley, they are young women who were brutally assaulted and killed by some of the men who were released at the beginning of the administration, well before a negotiated bipartisan bill. Former President Clinton actually referred to Lake and Riley Sunday, campaigning for you in Georgia, saying if those men had been properly vetted, Lake and Riley probably would not have been killed. So if it wouldn't have happened, this is well before any negotiation. This is well before Donald Trump got involved in the politics. This is a specific policy decision by your administration to release these men into the country. So what I'm saying to you, do you owe those families an apology?
Let me just say, first of all, those are tragic cases. There's no question about that. There is no question about that. And I can't imagine the pain that the families of those victims have experienced for a loss that should not have occurred. So that is true. It is also true that if a border security had actually been passed 9 months ago, it would be 9 months that we would have had more border agents at the border, more support for the folks who are working around the clock trying to hold it all together.
Madam Vice President.
To ensure that no future harm would occur. And this election in 20 days will determine whether we have a president of the United States who actually cares more about fixing a problem, even if it is not to their political advantage in an election, because there was a solution, Brett.
Madam Vice President, it was a policy decision in the early part of your administration. I will let one of the mothers talk about it. Take a listen.
Because of the Biden-Harris administration open border policies catch and release, they were enrolled in the Alternatives to Detention program. This meant that they were released into the United States. It was not even a full 3 weeks later that they would take my daughter, Jocelyn Nungaray's life. I believe the Biden-Harris administration open border policies are responsible for the death of my daughter.
That's the early days. So do you owe them an apology is what I'm saying.
I will tell you that I am so sorry for her loss.
Okay, I know that seemed like a lot longer than 26 minutes. But in fact, it was only six. I'm not going to put you guys through all that. That was the first question, all right? That's question number one. How many illegal aliens do you think your administration let in the country? That was it. That was the only question. Now he kind of caromed off that into, you know, one of the detrimental effects of all these people being allowed into the country that aren't supposed to be here, all these legal aliens, is crime goes up. Crime goes way up. And they lie to you and they say, well, you know, the crime's going down, which the FBI lied about. They set out a crime report, and then they waited for a couple of months, and then they revised it up. And it's not about crime being committed. It's about crime being reported. And a lot of times, the crime isn't reported, but now I'm straying. But the question was basically that. How many people do you think you let in? Did you hear a number? Did you hear anything? No. You got the word salad. You got the blah blah blah, yakety schmackety. That's what you got. And either she didn't know, she didn't want to answer. I don't know. I mean, she doesn't do well. She never has done well in serious interviews because she's not a serious person. She's a trophy hunter. You know what I mean? She just got in it to get it. You know, she likes the credentials. She likes how the resume looks. And that's it. There's no love. There's no commitment for the job itself. And there's no effort. Her staff employment turnover rate is like 90%. You go into that job, there's a 90% chance you're either going to get fired or you're going to quit. And a lot of these guys have quit because she's just so difficult and lazy. But the interview went on like that for another 20 minutes, And it had gotten so bad, those of you who didn't watch it, in the post-interview of Brett Baer and his thoughts on how he interviewed this person, he said, you know, he's trying to talk to her, and she's just blah, 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 blah. And he says, off camera, over here off his right shoulder, off the camera, he said, there are a bunch of aides standing around pointing at their wrists like they're, you know, at the time, and other guys are waving their arms saying, stop, just for the love of God, wrap this up. We got to go. And, of course, he does. And it's just, it was a disaster. Plain and simple, a disaster. And last week she did a similar thing with CNN, Anderson Cooper, and I mean, there's, and it's just as bad. It's, and I'm not gonna put you through any more of that. It's the largest elephant in a room I think that I've ever seen in politics in a long, long time. Joe Biden was a pretty big elephant in the room. In terms of his cognitive shortcomings and the decline that, you know, that he's undergoing. But it's just so huge, man. It's just so huge. And all this really says about the people who support her, and I just want to say this, the people who support Kamala Harris, by and large, with the exception, you know, of Joe's campaign staff, because they got some pretty hard feelings moving forward into this, and they still do, but beyond those people, these people that are supporting Kamala Harris are the same people that supported the lie that was Joe Biden. And what am I talking about? Well, these are all the people that told us there was nothing wrong with his mind. It was like a steel trap. He didn't have any problems with any of that stuff. He knew the capital of Djibouti was Djibouti, by God, and so there ain't nothing wrong with him. And they said that for 4 years, knowing full well. That's all, folks. They knew that. So what does this say about them? Well, what this says about them is that they are really good at believing and supporting lies, at buttressing falsehoods. That's how desperate they are for power. That's how badly these cats need to stay in control, how bad they want to stay in control. And she doesn't have any substance. So as you can see, obviously, from that 1 6-minute question, how bad that was going to be. So what are they left with? The fascist Nazi thing. Nazi. And they're trying to equate this event. I think it's happening tonight. In Madison Square Garden. Okay, it was sold out. Sold out Madison Square Garden within hours. Hillary Clinton the grand empress mother of left-wing politics wants to compare this Madison Square Garden event with another event that took place way back in 1939, and it was the American-German Bund Association, and it was a Hitler rally. Basically, what it was, there were a lot of naturalized Germans living here who were fans of what was going on in Germany at that time. And the rally was held in support of Adolf Hitler and his government, and they weren't looking at the Jew killing thing. They weren't looking at the concentration camps or the conquest of neighboring countries. We're not worried about that. What we want to talk about is how great things are going inside Germany and what a cool dude Hitler is. And they had a big rally. And obviously the idea is that Trump is a Nazi. That you and I are Nazis. That MAGA is not Make America Great Again. It's Make America Goose Step, Achtung. And here's the thing, fascist, you know, Mussolini, Hitler, it's terrible. Rarely, extremely rarely, if ever, I would say, do they ever compare Donald Trump to any communist, to Castro, to Ceausescu, to Mao? No, they never do that. And, you know, you stop and think about it, we're still dealing with communism. The Nazis we vanquished in a little less than a decade. About 6 years, 1939, 1945. So, you know, and we're still, to this day, fighting against communism. And a few years back, I remember, I was thinking about this the other day. A few years back, Dennis Prager at Prager University had a really, really good monologue about just this thing. And I dug it up, and we're going to listen to it here in a minute. And it gives the most logical, concise point on explanation as to why he's always compared to the Nazis, Donald Trump, or any of us, you, me. I think George Bush was a Nazi there for a while. You know, Reagan was a Nazi. We're all Nazis. But anyway, here's why they call us Nazis and not communists.
When people describe particularly evil individuals or regimes, why is it that they use the terms Nazi or fascist, but almost never communist? Given the unparalleled amount of human suffering communists have caused, why is communist so much less a term of revulsion than Nazi? Communists killed 70 million people in China, more than 20 million people in the Soviet Union, not including about 5 million Ukrainians, and almost one out of every three Cambodians. And communists enslaved entire nations in Russia, Vietnam, China, Eastern Europe, North Korea, Cuba, and much of Central Asia. They ruined the lives of well over a billion people. So why doesn't communism have the same terrible reputation as Nazism? Reason number one, there is, simply put, widespread ignorance of the communist record. Whereas both right and left loathe Nazism and teach its evil history, the left, and I'm talking about the left, not traditional liberals like Harry Truman or John F. Kennedy, has never loathed communism. And since the left dominates academia, almost no one teaches communism's evil history. Reason number two, the Nazis carried out the Holocaust. Nothing matches the Holocaust for pure evil. The rounding up of virtually every Jewish man, woman, child, and baby on the European continent and sending them to die is unprecedented and unparalleled. The communists killed far more people than the Nazis, but never matched the Holocaust in the systemization of genocide. The uniqueness of the Holocaust and the enormous attention rightly paid to it have helped ensure that Nazism has a worse name than communism. Reason number three, communism is based on nice-sounding theories. Nazism isn't. It's based on heinous-sounding theories. Intellectuals in general, including, of course, the intellectuals who write history, are seduced by words, so much so that they deem actions as less significant than words. For that reason, they haven't focused nearly as much attention on the horrific actions of communists as they have on the horrific actions of the Nazis. They dismiss the evils of communists as perversions of true communism. But they regard Nazi atrocities, correctly, as the logical and inevitable results of Nazism. Reason number four. Germans have thoroughly exposed the evils of Nazism, have taken responsibility for them, and have attempted to atone for them. Russians have not done anything similar regarding Lenin's or Stalin's horrors. To the contrary, Lenin, the father of Soviet communism, is still widely venerated in Russia. And as regards Stalin, as University of London Russian historian Donald Rayfield puts it, quote, people still deny, by assertion or implication, Stalin's Holocaust, unquote. Even less so as China exposed the greatest mass murderer and enslaver of them all, Mao Zedong. Mao remains revered in China. Every Chinese currency note has his picture on it. Until Russia and China and Vietnam and Cuba and North Korea acknowledge the evils their countries committed under communism, communism's evils will remain less known than the evils of the German state under Hitler. Reason number five. Communists murdered mostly their own people. The Nazis, on the other hand, killed very few fellow Germans. World opinion, that largely meaningless and amoral term, deems the murder of members of one's own group far less noteworthy than the murder of outsiders. That's why, for example, blacks killing millions of fellow blacks in Africa elicits almost no attention from world opinion. And reason number six. In the view of the left, the last good war was World War II, the war against German Nazism and Japanese fascism. The left does not regard wars against communist regimes as good wars. For example, the American war against Vietnamese communism is regarded as immoral, and the war against Korean communism and its Chinese communist backers is simply ignored. Until the left and all the institutions influenced by the left acknowledge how evil communism has been, we will continue to live in a morally confused world. In the meantime, all good people owe it to the victims of communism to learn what happened to them. Even worse than being murdered or enslaved is a world that doesn't even know that you were. I'm Dennis Prager.
Now, here's the question. And that was Dennis Prager, by the way. You can find his stuff at PragerU.com, or you can go to YouTube, and they have it, it's just a treasure trove of information for conservatives and anybody that's really, truly interested in American politics. It's a great place to go. Now, here's my question. Who is the party of authoritarianism in this country? Who is that? Who is the totalitarian political ideology? Well, all you got to do is just go back and look at who's done what over the last 16 years. Occupy Wall Street. You remember those guys? Occupy Wall Street? Who were those people? Who supported those people? Black Lives Matter. Antifa. Who supported those people? And who did those people, Occupy Wall Street and Black Lives Matter and Antifa, who did those people commit crimes against? Who did those people commit crimes, property crimes, and physical violence, property violence? Who bore the brunt of those attacks by those organizations? Who did Kamala Harris help organize a bail payment system for during the, I guess, back, well, during the that whole summer there, the George Floyd riots and the whole Black Lives Matter thing going, was going. Who did that? Okay, who supports those people? I got kind of tangled up in the question, but you get my meaning. And it's not us. If you're listening to this show, and thank you very much, by the way, for doing so, tell your friends if you're not too embarrassed. Tell your friends and see if we can get them to listen too. I appreciate it so much. But anyway, it's not you and I. We're not the people who do that. We're simply not. Who made you wear a mask everywhere you went? Service members, who made you take an untested and unbelievably dangerous inoculation in order to continue your career in the military? Nurses, first responders, who did that? Think about this. And that's just examples from the last couple of years. Look at what's been happening in the last four. Moms and dads that are worried about what their kids may be learning and going to school board meetings to find out what's going on or to redirect those policies to change and push back against what they think is not good for their kids. The FBI calls them domestic terrorists. Who are the politicians that let their cities be destroyed back during the second summer of love there? Who are the politicians that allowed that to happen? Who were the people demonstrating in front of Supreme Court justice houses to the point that these families had to have police protection? Who's doing that? Who's saying that it's okay for a guy to go in the women's bathroom just because he said he thinks he's a girl? I'm not letting that happen. I'm not in favor of any of that, and I'm pretty sure you guys aren't either. Who were the people that, back during COVID, arrested their fellow citizens for attending church services? Who are those people? Well, you know who they are. I know who they are. Who are the people in the media that try to gaslight us and tell us everything's cool, and if we don't think like they think, then we're the ones that are wrong? Who are these people making movies that are just so sick and dystopian? And, you know, the movies fail, bomb after bomb after bomb after bomb, but they just keep churning them out. I don't understand it. But if you look at it from the far out, way out there perspective that Hollywood and the entertainment industry is controlled by the devil, it's not really too hard to understand. There's natural, there's supernatural, there's demonic. Okay? You say whatever you want. Look at what they think is cool. Abortions up to and beyond the time of birth. Yeah, they're good with that. Guys going into ladies' rooms. Yeah, they're good with that. Teaching kids about homosexual intercourse. Yep, that's totally cool too. Telling them drag queens are okay. Yeah, that's all right. Yeah, we can do that. Not all that. Who are those people? Those are the people that accuse us of being evil. Okay? Alinsky talked about it. You know, he said, what you do is you accuse the opposition of the exact same things that you're doing. So then the attention is focused on them, and you can continue with your agenda. In psychology, when a person targets someone else on an individual basis, a person targets someone else and starts accusing them of the things that they themselves are guilty of, it's called projection. A transference, you know. But in politics or on an organizational level, and in this case, we're going to look at it from political ideologies. It's also known as political mirroring, which is closer to what Alinsky said. You accuse the people that, you know, your opposition of being those things which you really are. And they say, what? We're going to shred the Constitution. We're going to put people in jail. We're going to imprison our political enemies. We're going to use the military on the citizenry, all these things. Look at what they've done. Look at the things they've done. Look at the things that they have accused you and I and the middle, you know, the center right of doing, and look at what they've done. Look at how they frame us as such a threat to America by simply saying, you know, they just take what they're doing and accuse us of doing it. And they've been doing it for a long time. Now, though, there is a desperation. There's a desperation because I don't know if it's too late or not, but because there is a true awakening taking place. People are waking up. People are getting woke. But they're not getting woke to Colin Kaepernick. Well, I guess in a way they are. But they're getting woke to what these people have been doing. They're starting to see through this evil. And guys, this world has a shit pot full of evil people. And sometimes they don't look like evil people. Sometimes we see them as good people, wanting to do good for the common man, thinking that they know what's best for everybody, and so convinced of the rightness of their ways, they're willing to implement this stuff by force. Again, what do you think's been happening? You know why they settled on a 6-foot interval during COVID? Go check it out. I'm not making it up. They settled on a 6-foot interval in COVID because the CDC was of the opinion that the average American could not estimate 10 feet. That was the original deal. They wanted a 10-foot interval in between people. 10-foot bubble. Because after 10 feet, or in this case 6 feet, those germs just fall straight to the ground. They don't go any further. 6 feet is their maximum distance of travel as an airborne molecule. They just fall, they just drop. So who's been doing that? We didn't do that. We haven't done that. We wouldn't even try to do that. 2 weeks out. 2 weeks out. Is anybody nervous? 2 weeks out? I am. I'm a little nervous. Oh, I just happened to think while I was going through that whole communist Nazi thing, What got me started on Hillary Clinton, as I had mentioned earlier in the show, Hillary Clinton was comparing tonight, it's tonight, by the way, to Trump's Madison Square Garden rally to a German-American Bund Association rally that took place in Madison Square Garden in 1939. Now, it was a pro-Nazi rally, and that's what she's going on. And again, that's where they take us. They were pro-Nazi, okay? Why? Because it's this one guy, and the place is sold out. That's what makes it like the Nazi rally, because Trump is a Nazi. Well, you know, there was another guy. There was this one guy, this other one guy, sold out Madison Square Garden about 55 years ago. Elvis. Yeah, Elvis sold out Madison Square Garden. Why aren't we comparing it to an Elvis concert? Why do we have to compare it to a Nazi rally? Well, because that suits them, and because they think Trump is a Nazi. But the same thing could be said. I mean, everywhere he goes, when he has these rallies, it's like the Stones are in town, man. Okay? People show up early. They tailgate. They fellowship with one another. Probably going to be a regret that I never went to one of these things. There were a few close where I could have gone, you know, booked a room, checked out the show, and then came back and told you guys about it. But I didn't have the time to devote to that like I wish I could. But he's going to be taken here in about 4 hours, I think 5 o'clock. He's going to take the stage this evening at 5 o'clock, Madison Square Garden. And people started showing up at 8 a.m. this morning. Yeah. Who does that for Kamala Harris? Who does that for Joe Biden? Who does that for Nancy Pelosi or Chuck Schumer? Who gets really jacked up when they know Nancy Pelosi is going to be in town? Yeah, exactly. Elon Musk is going to be there as well. But here's the thing about these rallies. There may be some geographically specific references to whatever town he's in or the people that he's talking to, but what he is saying to these people, Donald Trump that is, what he is saying to his supporters that are in the venue there with him during those rallies, it resonates with all of us. It resonates with all of us. And, you know, you want to talk about the lion's den. You want to talk about the belly of the beast. New York City, Madison Square Garden. An event in a venue that is in one of the bluest of blue towns. Tonight. I wonder, and I'm sure there are probably still moments of lucidity within the mind of Joe Biden when it comes to what's going on and how he was done. Okay, 14 million votes. Okay, he clinched the primary. He was the guy. 14 million votes just swept away, just forgotten about. Like the survivors of Helene and the survivors of Milton. That was then. This is now. But I'm wondering if he's aware of what's going on, of what trouble has been made for the Harris campaign. And he may have known all along that this was what was going to happen. And I wonder if he thinks about it, if old Joe's happy that this is what's going on. Because, you know, he's a pretty petty, vindictive guy, too. And all that theatrics, you know, all that stuff, that was just a face for the public when he got booted out, when they removed him as candidate. He had a part to play, and he was able to do it, but I'm just wondering, man, I'm wondering how much a role his campaign and his operatives and surrogates have played in sabotaging Kamala Harris. And, you know, you really don't have to play a big part in that because she's been fantastic at sabotaging herself the last 4 years, but the last 4 or 5 months in particular. I don't know what's going to happen here. If Donald Trump wins, he's going to have to win by a margin beyond anything that Democrat cheating could compensate for. And it could be that it happens. It could be, if he does win, that's how it's going to have to be. But, you know, it's not just that. What's going to happen that these guys might do to hold up the election? And by that, I mean, let's say Donald Trump wins, and let's say he does so by a number of votes which would preclude any cheating on the Democrat side. Kamala Harris is vice president. She has to certify the election. Do you think she would do it? Jamie Raskin's been talking for the last 3 weeks about how that's entirely possible that it wouldn't happen. They probably have plans for impeachment in place right now. We haven't even had the election yet. Isn't that how they did it last time? See, the one guy is important because Donald Trump is the one guy. He's who we've put, we've bet all our marbles. We've bet the farm on this guy. We're all in. There's no halfways here. But it's going to take more than him to accomplish the things that we need to see accomplished. We can't be dissuaded. And we can't allow the left to throw any more monkey wrenches into the works than they have. How do we do that? Well, can we do that? That's the trick. But it's going to be incumbent upon us, and we're going to have to support Donald Trump, in more ways than simply with a vote and a bumper sticker. We have to be prepared to push back on any of the crazy stuff that these left-wing kooks are going to try to pull. It can't be just him. He's not Superman. He's just a really good guy at what he does. He needs us. Probably more than we need him. And he's the reason His ability to resonate with so much of the country in terms of how he feels about America and what he thinks is best for America and American citizens. That's why so many people support him. It resonates. He wants for the country what we want for the country. I know what they say about him. There are people who say he's a jerk, he's this, he's that. And you know what? He probably is. And I'll tell you something else. So am I. And you probably are too. We're all flawed. We're all failed. We all got dumb things that we've done, dumb things that we're going to do. That's just the nature of the beast. I'm not electing a Sunday school teacher. I'm not voting for pastor. I'm not voting for den mother or president of the PTA or the Homeowners Association. I'm looking for a guy that's going to be able to run this country to the benefit of its citizens. And that encompasses a lot of things. That encompasses social programs. That encompasses national defense policies. Domestic policies. How are we going to fix all the things that are wrong? And another thing, it's not going to happen overnight. It's not going to happen overnight. And it's going to take... the fight still goes on. And will continue for years after this. But the tide has turned. And we can see victory. We can see light at the end of the tunnel. And it's not an oncoming train. We're close. But like I said, we can't let up. We can't stop here. We just can't. Let's see. I have something else I want to look at here. Oh, the bait and switch. Did you guys hear about that? Kamala Harris got an endorsement from Beyonce, I think yesterday. And what they did is they held this big rally in an arena somewhere. Gee whiz, where was it? Houston. Okay. They're in Houston. And... the media and everybody leads the public to believe that this is going to be a concert. She's going to sing. She's going to do her thing for Kamala. But that's not what happens. She comes out and says, hey, what's up? Kamala's the girl. It's who I'm voting for. It's who you need to vote for too. So you cats be cool. I'm out of here. And that was it. That was it. Now, they say, and I don't know how true this is, so let me preface this by saying that. I don't know how true this is. That Beyonce was paid $10 million to come out and do that. Now, Harris's campaign is flush with money, but it doesn't seem to be doing them any good. I don't know if it's true or not. A lot of people are saying that is what it is. I'm not confirm. I'm going to be like a CIA. I'm neither confirming nor denying that this is the case, but that's the rumble, that she got paid fat money. Okay, say it wasn't $10 million. Let's say it was $2.5 million. Let's say it was $5 million. She got paid fat money to come out there and endorse Kamala Harris. And then split. That was it. No singing. No booty shaking. No nothing. Just coming out. Kamala's my girl. Peace. We'll see you. Again. She's like Wile E. Coyote. Blindfolded in a room full of rakes. And every step she takes, kapow, 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 kapow. Nothing has been good. Nothing. Not even the softball interviews have done her anything. Donald Trump's starting to pull away in all the national polls. Right now, 1, 2 points, 3 points here and there. In some places, a lot larger, but he's pulling away. But again, if we win, we have to win in such numbers that just, you know, they just rinse away any potential cheating by the Democrats. And you know what they're going to do. Can it be done? We're going to find out soon. Like I said, they started before 8 o'clock this morning in New York City. Madison Square Garden. Sold out. Gonna be it. And I guess the other thing, too, is with all his flaws, and he's got them, man. Don't think he does. With all his flaws, Americans see his intentions. Americans see his intent. That's what counts. We know his intention. We know his sentiments because we saw him for 4 years already. He tried to do everything he could to get fixed what he could when he could. But you had a boatload of obstructionist Democrats and rhinos where this went on. Look, here's what's happening. I think what we're seeing, ultimately, starting here, and it's going to take a number of years, maybe a couple decades, but what we're starting to see is the destruction of the Democrat Party as we know it today, and likewise, the subsequent destruction and reformation of a Republican Party. These guys are losing their relevance. Are there people that still pay attention to Bill Clinton, who I think is getting ready to die? Have you guys seen him lately? Oh boy, looking rough. But Bill Clinton and Hillary Clinton and Barack and Michelle Obama, these guys are losing their relevance. Nobody's paying attention to them like they once did. Same thing with Nancy Pelosi. Same thing with Jamie Raskin, Chuck Schumer, all those. Same thing with Mitch McConnell. Same thing with Mitt Romney. Same thing with the Cheneys. All these establishment people from both the Democrat and Republican Party are going to be swept away. And we're going to see something new. Something, I hope, better in what's getting ready to happen. Two more weeks. That's all we got left. That's all the push we have left. That's all the time we have left to let people know, to do some outreach, to talk to people about voting. Two weeks to be aware of the risks and to point those risks out, to beware of the threats and the terrible things that are going to happen if these clowns get, if Harris and Walz and these commies get another 4 years. I don't know that we can take it. I really don't. But we have an opportunity now to have a system put in place through Donald Trump, through J.D. Vance, through the transition team personnel that are going to be, you know, through the personnel that the transition team are going to be looking at using, we have a really good solid shot. We're probably going to be in a position where we have the Senate and the House. And maybe it won't be by a razor-thin margin. Maybe it'll be comfortable enough to where we can start getting work done. But it's up to me and it's up to you. Talking to the people we know, being optimistic, being encouraged, being undaunted. The true embodiment of the happy warrior, that's what we have to be, and we have to walk right into it. Oh, man. Well, I think that's about all I got for today. I want to thank you guys for the opportunity to talk with you. Thursday, we will be on blogtalkradio.com at Patriot Nation, where our guest is going to be Michael Cutler, terrific guy, a friend of mine, probably America's foremost authority on issues pertaining to immigration and just how badly the system screwed up. And we'll be talking to him. We'll be back here next Sunday through the RSS feed. I try to get it on sometime Sunday afternoon. I'm not always consistent in that. I mean, in terms of the time. But definitely afternoon, after 12 p.m. on Sundays, you'll see the show. And that's all the time we got. Again, thank you for the opportunity to hang out with you. We will be back next week taking a look at things as we do through a conservative perspective. In the meantime, God bless you. God bless America. Take good care of yourselves. We'll see you then.